Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. I'm Seth Merrow, another chilly Sunday morning, and looks like a winter storm tonight, later tonight. It's not going to affect any racing or anything today, but just alert folks to be prepared if you haven't looked at the weather or the news yet. In our upstate New York area, it looks like we will, starting later on tonight, well into tomorrow, we're going to get hit with some snow, so keep that in mind. Go out and stock up perhaps a little bit and plan for tomorrow. If you have to head into work tomorrow, plan for some extra time, it sounds like. Luckily, I'm off tomorrow, so I, for once, avoid the storm, but came in here today. And once again today, the thermometer reading on my car dashboard, -1. So welcome to upstate New York in January. Although, knock wood, we really haven't had a lot of snow so far, so that's been a bonus, but I guess that changes later on today. But again, we look with envy and live vicariously by looking at Gulfstream in Tampa during the afternoon, typically a little Oaklawn as well. Oaklawn yesterday looked chilly with that, people wearing jackets and some winter gear. But we do look at the Florida tracks with some envy, and we will look at all three of those, Oaklawn, Tampa, and Gulfstream, in our stakes review section. Before we do that, do want to remind you that we like to thank Gulfstream for their sponsorship of this program, some of the other programming and events here on the network and at Capital OTB during their championship meet. Appreciate the support from Gulfstream Park. And in fact, why don't we start at Gulfstream? And I said yesterday, it's not your Sunshine Millions. It's not your father's Sunshine Millions. The Sunshine Millions used to be a nice little series of cowbred and Florida bred races for a while. And there was some racing in Florida, some racing out in Southern California. I don't know how long it hasn't quite been that anymore, but certainly yesterday, the Sunshine Classic and the Sunshine Sprint. Two fun little stakes races on the card at Gulfstream, but they weren't of the same quality or purse that was put up years ago in the Sunshine Millions. But Sunshine Classic yesterday, as I say, it was a fun race. And the fun part about this race yesterday centered on Shamrocket. And the question was going to be Shamrocket, who was an all-turf horse for Todd Pletcher throughout the career, was moving to the dirt yesterday. And it just looked like, and I went back and forth and I debated about, you know, with a turf horse like that, this is a real experiment. Do I want to put that one on top? And I just looked at the rest of the field and I thought they picked a great field to take their dirt shot with, and maybe go just get a workout and I'll class the bunch for the better part of a $75,000 purse. That's how it worked out. And the post-race article in the Racing Form quoted Todd Pletcher as saying, and Shamrocket here is the number three. Number one, Sir Ollie, runs second. Nacho Papa, the four, runs third. But you can see Shamrocket coming and gets up, and the chart margin is half a length, but has to work. Sir Ollie is stubborn there on the rail. And so Shamrocket gets it done. Boy, that's a generous half length. That looked like a neck to me. But as the 6-5 favorite gets it done, and again, Todd Pletcher in the post-race article in the Racing Form was quoted as saying, gee, you know, he worked well on the dirt, and we always wanted to try him on the dirt. This looked like a good spot, and we may look for some more spots. Now this gives us some options, and he may go longer on the dirt, so that could be interesting as well. I don't know. To me, I said yesterday on OTB Live, this is not Cigar. This is not like, hey, we found a new career, and he's going to be a superstar on dirt. He just barely got, and Sir Ali lightly raced and may turn out to be a nice horse himself. So maybe it's a, you know, not as, I was going to say bad. It didn't look bad. It's not as questionable as it looked, just beating Sir Ollie by a neck in your dirt debut in a state bred $75,000 claiming race. As they say, Sir Ali came into the race with only four starts for Safi Joseph, so still pretty lightly raced. There may be some upside there, and he may turn out to be all right, actually, but still, Shamrock had had to work a little bit. And again, as I said, when I handicapped the race, I went back and forth. Do I want to take the shot against it? And eventually I put Shamrock on top, and I just thought, he can go backwards a ways and still get this bunch. I did not see the buyers. Let me just see quickly go to the typical spots where I can find the buyers the next day. I didn't check those this morning. I will see, however, if there are buyers. Sometimes they don't come out until later in the day, but let me see, because as I say, I didn't see the buyers. That would make a difference. I mean, if Shamrock had held up his buy, yeah, and I'm not seeing anything. So, all right, I don't see any. So I don't know whether the buyers are out yet, but it'll be interesting to see what he got. I mean, if he did put up a buyer similar to what he put on the turf, then maybe the dirt is an option. And as I say, Sir Ali may actually turn out to be a good one. So it may be better than it the first impressions having to really duel on the switch to the dirt. My feeling is probably the number went backwards a little bit, though, and Shamrock is still a little more of a turf horse than a dirt horse. But we will see what's in the future for that one. Also on the card yesterday at Gulfstream, the Sunshine Sprint. Brian Edo and I were on the handicappers report yesterday. Also had Jason Blewett on Racing Across America, and Jason and I were looking at the two Gulfstream stakes also. And Brian and Jason both thought Pudding might be a little bit intriguing in the Sunshine Sprint. Given the early speed, and it looked like Pudding had the ability to kind of sit off the speed and then pounce late and maybe take advantage of the race falling apart. Well, there was plenty of speed, but they didn't come back. It's going to be number five, Gatsby, getting it done over number one, Cool Quest. That's Pudding in third. He's making a late run, but it's too late, and they aren't giving up on the front end. They flew early, 21, 44, 56. The final time is going to be 109 and change, so they were legit all the way around the track. It did play out the way it looked with some speed there and kind of knocking heads. They just didn't give up. They didn't knock each other out. So Pudding made a run, but it was not collapsing on the front end, and it does wind up to be Gatsby getting it done for Carlos David. Came in good form. A couple of seconds, a third, and a first in the last four starts down at Gulfstream. Coming into the race, he'd hit the exacta seven times in 14 starts at Gulfstream, so likes the track and a bona fidely good sprinter. Cool Quest was coming out of a nice little win at Gulfstream himself, and so those two hook up and put on a little show with Gatsby getting it done. Luis Saez in the saddle down at Gulfstream in the Sunshine Sprint. And again, they have taken the millions out of it. It is not, as I say, the sunshine, your father's sunshine millions, and it is now not the sunshine. It was just the Sunshine Classic and the Sunshine Sprint yesterday, both for $75,000. All right, let's move on and take a look at the stakes action at Tampa yesterday. We had Ren Carruthers from Tampa on with us yesterday morning talking a little bit about these stakes. And in the Pasco, both she and I like Provocateur from Todd Pletcher. Was coming out of a win, a maiden breaker in the third career start at Tampa back on December 23rd. Provocateur will be the number one horse. I thought top of the stretch, I thought we were going to get it done with Provocateur. But Markhamian makes a late run, and at a little bit of a price. Markhamian was 5-1. Provocateur was 2-1. Catton, the number five horse, was the 8-5 favorite. They're all right there at the end, but it does wind up to be Markhamian, the number four, pulling away. Chart margin here, 2.5 at 5-1. And Provocateur, stakes debut, decent little effort, I think. Pletcher will have a nice little horse going forward. Pletcher, Might, Racehorse, Spendthrift, and company. Catton, again, runs third in there as the favorite with a little bit of a late push. I think all three of those are interesting going forward. I don't know whether we have any superstars coming out of this, but Mark Amian, this one may have a little bit of a future off the PP so far, because what we've seen so far from Mark Amian, back in September, a near miss in a maiden special race, a maiden special weight race, a state bred maiden special, laid off from September until the middle of December, and the comeback again over at Gulfstream in a state bred maiden special was a big win with a number that matched up nicely with this group. I'm interested to see what the number was yesterday, because the whole group coming in on best efforts, the better horses were topping out in the mid-70s. So, you know, early in the three-year-old season, that's okay. Like I say, I don't know whether you have any superstars, but we'll see what Mark Amian did yesterday. If there was a step forward, that one could be interesting. Coming out of the really nice win at Gulfstream to break the maiden in the second start with a mid-70 buyer, and then steps into Stakes Company and gets the victory yesterday. And as I say, Provocateur is kind of a similar scenario, and only the fourth career start, moves maiden special weight into a stakes race and runs a decent second. So, as I say, see what the number is. But I think, you know, they'll have some pretty good horses going forward. I don't know about the top level, but they both ran decently yesterday. To kind of make a little bit of an impression. Over at Tampa for the three-year-old boys on the three-year-old girls scene in the Gasparilla, 7 furlongs, the trip. And the favorite was Outfoxed. I liked Strategic Bird for Mark Cassie, and that one went off as the close-up second choice. Goddess of Fire, I had that one in the second slot. Ren Carruthers yesterday liked Goddess of Fire. The Todd Pletcher runner had thrown in a little bit of a dud and attempted. Goddess of Fire is the number 4 horse and makes a nice run here. So Goddess of Fire might be interesting watching going forward, because, again, this is a nice late push. But by then, Outfoxed Strategic Bird are out in front. I thought Strategic Bird, my top pick, was pretty good at the top of the stretch, but came up a little short late. And as I say, Goddess of Fire pushed on by, but Outfoxed now. Outfoxed is going to be fun to watch, I think, and just see what this one can do. Goes out for LNJ Foxwoods of Covfefe fame and Bill Mott. And this horse, Outfoxed, won, well, in the career debut, ran third up at Saratoga behind Echo Zulu. Followed up that third place finish at Saratoga, going down to Gulfstream late in August and late in September, ran in a couple of those Rich Sire Stakes races, $200,000 purse, $400,000 purse, and ran away and hid from both of those fields. So came into yesterday's race. This is pretty amazing when you look at it. Goes in a couple of restricted Sire Stakes races down at Gulfstream off a third in the debut at Saratoga, but went into yesterday's race already with $372,000 in the bank. They bought the horse at Ocala last year in April for $360,000, so they were already out on the purchase price, and yesterday just added to the total. It was $125,000 purse, so they picked up the you know, majority portion of that. And now 3 wins in 4 career starts for Outfoxed, stepping yesterday into Open Stakes Company and got it done again very nicely. But as I say, Goddess of Fire with the late run for Todd Pletcher, that one rebounded nicely. Goddess of Fire had won the debut up at Saratoga. Then they tried the Pocahontas and ran third behind Hidden Connection. And then the Tempted back at Belmont was a disappointing fifth. So yesterday's second, as I say, a little bit of a rebound, and that one. And I thought it was, again, a good late run. So both of the top two there, interesting. Strategic Bird with the fade late was a little bit disappointing, but only the third career start. And, you know, maybe the 7's a little long. Maybe they keep that one looking towards shorter sprints. Didn't pull up a replay, but I will mention the 8th race at Tampa yesterday. Cheryl Spite, a nice winner for Roger Atfield. And Cheryl Spite had started the career up at Woodbine with real promise. Broke the maiden in the career debut, then went in the Grade 3 Marine and won that. Woodbine Mile, I mean, third career start, they tried the Woodbine Mile. Wound up 7th, but by less than 6 lengths. Tried the Toronto Cup after that and ran third. So the three-year-old season back in 2020, four starts, couple of wins. Again, there was some real promise. Subsequently, last year, they came down to Gulfstream and tried the dirt in January of last year, threw in a clunker, and then obviously there was a little bit of a ding or whatever because they didn't come back until December. Again, they were off the turf, so they weren't on the dirt in December, but they would have been on the synthetic and threw in a clunker there. And given the good performance on the synthetic up at Woodbine, you maybe scratched your head and thought, is Cheryl's spite back? But she was. It was a nice performance yesterday over at Tampa on the turf. She gets back to the turf finally and runs very well. So Cheryl Spite in only the seventh career start as a five-year-old for Roger Atfield and Charles Fipke looked pretty good. But I will note, running second there, hidden stash. And I mentioned yesterday, for those of us SU grads, we'll remember this one because it had a little buzz, Kentucky Derby time. They entered the horse in the Kentucky Derby. And it was notable because Jim Boeheim owns a little piece of Hidden Stash. It's a partnership, and one of the partners had given part of his share to Jim Boeheim. So there was a little bit of a Syracuse connection there. Ended up running 14th in the Kentucky Derby. Had run second in last year's Tampa Bay Derby behind Helium, and so that propelled them to the Bluegrass where the horse ran fourth, and then the dud in the Kentucky Derby. Hidden Stash had been off since the Kentucky Derby, but wound up running second yesterday in the return to the races and the debut on turf. So maybe that's the future now for Hidden Stash. But again, in a little bit of an optional claimer, non-winners of two on the turf at Tampa yesterday. Cheryl Spite, Hidden Stash, both notable in there. But other stakes action, winding up the stakes action at Tampa was the Wayward Lass. That one for fillies and mares, four-year-olds and up, going a mile and a 16th, and it does wind up being Nantucket Red. I had this one down in the third spot, 10-1 on the morning line. I was a little surprised, though. This horse went off at 15-1. Allworthy, the number 7, was likely the horse to beat, and the betting public landed there at 9-5. Don't Get Cozy winds up third. It's 1-7-5. Striking Chrome, the 6, was the one I had on top. That one's there just a little too late. Winds up running fourth, but Nantucket Red, who, as I said, and we talked about this race yesterday with Ren Carruthers, and I had pulled up the last race from both Striking Chrome, my top pick, and Nantucket Red. It was a turf race with Nantucket Red a neck in front of Striking Chrome. And Ren and I were talking yesterday, and on the morning line, both were 10-1. And I said, I think these will separate because Striking Chrome, the direction I went, had some dirt form. Nantucket Red was far more of a turf horse. So I thought both at 10-1, I think they're going to separate out. And it wound up that way with Striking Chrome going from 10-1 to 5-1 and Nantucket Red going from 10-1 to 15-1. I had them both in my mix. I put Striking Chrome on top given that one had better dirt form. But off that race that we showed yesterday on the turf, I thought, I find it interesting that they're trying the dirt with Nantucket Red. Nantucket Red gets it done, and if you did toss that one into your mix, you wind up with $33 in change. So that was the Wayward Lass at Tampa. And finally, on our stakes review section, we will take a look at the fifth season down at Oak Lawn yesterday, $150,000. For four-year-olds and up going a mile. This was a nice race. I took a shot with Mucho, and it's 7-1. I thought I had a pretty good play in here coming around the track. Mucho was kind of taking him all the way around, and up until late, Mucho was right there in the number 9 horse again at 7-1. Rated R Superstar, the number 2 horse, makes a nice sustained run here. I still thought mine Mucho, I thought, I'm going to have the heart. I'm going to hold on. And then about here, I said, he's going to go by. Rated R Superstar does go by. Mucho second. Thomas Shelby, the number 1 horse, runs third. But this was a nice race. Silver Prospector was in here, disappointed a little bit, running fifth. Snapper Sinclair runs sixth. And Concert Tour, who went off as the favorite at 3-2, winds up last in the field of 9, went off the favorite. If you remember Concert Tour last year, started the career for Bob Baffert and won the first three starts of the career, maiden special, the San Vicente, came over to Oaklawn and won the Rebel, then went off as the favorite in the Arkansas Derby. Superstock won that, and Concert Tour ran third. Concert Tour subsequently goes to the Preakness and winds up ninth, a well-beaten ninth, and hadn't been seen since that start. Subsequently moved from the Bob Baffert Barn into the Brad Cox Barn, and given that promise early in the career, early in the three-year-old season, a little bit of success in the Rebel at Oaklawn, the betting public landed on Concert Tour again as a 3-2 favorite yesterday, but last in the field of nine with Joel Rosario back riding and riding down at Oaklawn. So a little bit of a disappointment there. But the winner is a fun story. I looked it up as I was on the air yesterday because you look down the page and you see that these folks, Danny Caldwell and trainer Federico Villafranco, claimed rated R Superstar right here at Oaklawn last year, just about this time last year, for $50,000. This is now a 9-year-old gelding. So when they claimed the horse, he was an 8-year-old gelding. He had had at that point probably, just looking at the 800 and some thousand dollars in the bank. So it was a successful 8-year-old, except if you go back and look at the 7-year-old season back in 2020, just before they claimed him. They claimed him early in 2021. 2020, he was 11 starts, no wins, 2 seconds, and a third. So they're 2 starts into the 2021 season. He's now an 8-year-old gelding, and you're popping out $50,000 for a horse that in the previous year had no victories. Well, they put the $50,000 up, and you subsequently look, and I double-checked, and, you know, he had won the race, the $50,000 claimer that they took him out of. So I looked up the purse at that and kind of subtracted it. Subsequent to that race, subsequent to their claim, they put about $300,000, just under $300,000 in the bank with this horse last year. Yesterday, they take down the lion's share of $150,000 purse. So they are well over $400,000 claiming last year an 8-year-old gelding who didn't have a win the year before. That's a clever claim. You got to tip your hat to them for picking up Rated R Superstar and subsequently turning a $50,000 claim into $400,000 of purse money. So, again, Rated R Superstar taking the fifth season yesterday at Oaklawn. Kind of a fun story. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we will have some news and notes, I think. Normally I would handicap, but I have a bunch of news and notes here, including the finalists for the Eclipse Awards came out yesterday. So we'll touch on that. And a little bit later on, our friend Gene Kirshner from the Buffalo News, horse racing columnist from the Buffalo News. I always like to catch up with Gene about this time of year because he puts out his Racing Kreskin column. He is making some predictions for 2022, and we'll go back and we'll see how the Kreskin 2021 predictions did as well. So Gene Kirshner coming up in a little bit, but first we'll take a break and come back, have some news and notes, so stay tuned.
The best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku.
The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. Seth Merrill in the studio. Thanks for joining us. News came out this week. Matt Hagerty in the Racing Forum. NYRA had a meeting with the regulatory board, and some news came out of that this past week. The Belmont Fall meeting might be moved to Aqueduct. Decisions haven't been made, but you know, because of the regulatory board and whatnot, NYRA has to kind of keep ahead of this kind of thing. But it will depend on planning and building and contracting, licensing issues and whatnot. For the tunnel they're going to build at Belmont, they're going to build a tunnel under the track that will accommodate, as I understand, both vehicles, but certainly foot traffic as well. I think they plan to develop a little bit of the infield perhaps for a fan use in the future. So they're building a tunnel under the track at Belmont, which may mean they will have to accommodate things by, again, running the fall meet this year at Aqueduct after Saratoga. So, again, that's not for certain, but that's just floating out there right now. What does seem like a certainty, they're going to put a one-turn chute on the far turn, on the clubhouse turn at Saratoga. So I'm guessing a 1 mile race will be not two turns, but a turn and a half, essentially. The chute, I would think, will come down, and that's what it sounds like from the article. It says some of the parking over on the far turn will disappear. I'm guessing also, I don't know this for certain, but I would guess that would include that little rail picnic area they put in this year, which I thought was kind of a fun addition. We'll see. There may still be room to accommodate that, but if you remember, and I would go by it almost every day as I left our backstretch set and went to the front side in the afternoon, and it seemed like it was fairly popular. It was getting people, it depended on the day of week and whatnot, but it seemed like it was a new addition that was fairly popular. But it is, you know, the 1 mile chute is what it is, and so there's only a certain amount of room to accommodate it, but that's, you know, it'll come around the far turn like that. And the reasoning given was a lot of times, particularly when they took turf races off the turf, there just wasn't enough variation in distances. So you sometimes you would have to jump in distance to a mile and a mile plus that was not really suitable. And I'm just quoting here from one of the NYRA, the racing secretary, actually. We're a little bit of a disadvantage of having a quarter of a mile where you're in no man's land. You can go 7/8 of, or a mile and an eighth, and there isn't a lot of demand for two-turn races. So being able to split the difference in certain categories should be an advantage. So it'll be interesting to see, how it all plays out, where it is and how it plays out, and then how it plays out in the afternoon with the races. NYRA also announced that they're going to put an artificial surface down on the training track at Belmont. And according to, I'm not familiar enough with the training procedures down at Belmont to know, but according to the Matt Hagerty article, the training track sparingly used, but Glenn Kozak is quoted as saying it's something we can learn from, we can poke holes in. In other words, they're thinking potentially of maybe adding a synthetic surface to one of the other tracks, you know, a racing surface perhaps. And so they would, use this as just, again, a little test area to see what the maintenance is that's involved and whatnot. So, again, training track at Belmont, potentially getting a synthetic surface. Also coming out of New York over the last week, Dave Grenig article worth checking off on the handicapping side of things. Jose Gomez, an apprentice on a little bit of a run. I noted it what, a couple of days ago, I guess. Well, yeah, when they were last racing down there Friday, that Gomez was a guy that you had to pay a little bit of attention to. This past week, he went from a 10-pound apprentice to a 7-pound apprentice and had a few wins that automatically made him notable at that level. But as I read the article, I thought, well, now we know why he's maybe a hot apprentice. He is actually being handled by his agent, Angel Cordero. So agent and mentor, and there's some comments from Angel Cordero in the article about how they study films and whatnot. And if you're going to be an up-and-coming, if you're going to be a 10-pound apprentice and move to the 7-pound and be an up-and-coming guy on the New York scene, I don't know if there's anybody better to have looking over your shoulder than Angel Cordero. So, again, keep your eyes on this guy, Jose Gomez, who is an up-and-coming apprentice, perhaps, during this winter season down in New York. There was a meeting in Albany, I believe, New York Gaming Commission, this past week, that discussed the rule requiring married jockeys in New York to be coupled. If you remember a few years ago, last year, was it? We had that situation with the husband and wife jockey, Trevor McCarthy and Katie Davis, who, even with horses that were owned and trained by different entities, they would have to be coupled. And it wasn't good for bettors. It wasn't good for the jockeys themselves. Didn't help their business. And it was just, it's kind of an antiquated rule. And, you know, brothers, the Ortiz brothers ride regularly without being coupled. So it was just, it was a funny rule, but it was in the rule book. And so they're considering, you know, changing that, which hopefully, because again, it just, it doesn't really make sense in the 21st century, certainly. But notable coming out of the article about this meeting this past week, they were looking at the couple wagering rules regarding married couples, but they then started to look at coupled rules completely, and they're now considering doing away with coupled entries in New York altogether. I have mixed feelings about that because I heard Andy Serling talking about it the other day on one of the pre-race comments, and he was talking about it and said, you know, bad for bettors. And I think that the value is bad for bettors, and I get that, but the rule was put into place to protect bettors because you don't want an entry where you don't know as a bettor, but one horse is going out and just trying to, you know, drain the field and set it up for the closer. You don't know that as a bettor. And so when they coupled them, you got both halves and it didn't make any difference what the strategy was. Now, uncoupling, we may get some situations. But that said, the coupling rules really over the past 10 years, but they have certainly completely changed from when I first got into the game. And there are a lot more situations of uncoupled entries. And frankly, those situations really haven't come up. So I guess, you know, my argument that it was to protect the bettors, if you look practically speaking as the way it's played out, probably, you know, I still think if they uncouple all entries, there will come a point where there will be a race where bettors go, you know, they've uncoupled and we didn't know how this was going to play out. But it seems like it's such an aberration that probably, you know, for, again, the value for the bettors and uncoupled entries, increasing field size, so to speak, it probably isn't a bad idea to go in that direction. And that is the, it sounds like, I don't know if that's the direction they are going, but that's the direction they're looking at, to do away with coupled entries altogether in New York. As I said yesterday, the finalists for the Eclipse Awards came out. Eclipse Awards themselves will be Thursday, February 10th, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. I believe they're giving away this year out at Santa Anita. I don't see that on the press release, but I think that's the game plan. But just to kind of run down and give you an idea of who made the finalist list for 2021 Eclipse Awards, 2-year-old males, Corniche Jack Christopher, and modern games on the two-year-old Philly side. This is going to be a slam dunk, and be interested to see. You know, after the Eclipse Awards are announced, usually the vote totals come out as well. Be interested to see. But Echo Zulu, Juju's Map, and Pizza Bianca, two-year-old Philly. But you'd have to think Echo Zulu a slam dunk in there. Pizza Bianca, if they had a two-year-old turf Philly Eclipse, would be at the top of the list. But Echo Zulu seems like a slam dunk. Three-year-old male, Essential Quality, Life is Good, Medina Spirit. I think Essential Quality has the edge in there, but that one's going to be interesting to see. Three-year-old Philly, Clairiere, Malathat, Santa Barbara. I would think Malathat probably has the edge in there. Older Dirt Male, that one's a slam dunk. Nix Go, Maxfield, and Mystic Guide. Nix Go seems like a slam dunk, as does Older Dirt Female. Latruska, March Lorraine, and She Dares the Devil. Again, be interested to see how the voting breaks out for Older Dirt Female, because Latruska seems like a slam dunk there. Male Sprinter was one of the tougher categories this year. Aloha West, Flightline, Jackie's Warrior. Flightline with that incredible Malibu. Wasn't much of a resume, but it's hard to ignore and argue against that 118 buyer in the Malibu. But we'll see how Male Sprinter shakes out. Female Sprinter, Bella Sophia, CC Gamine. Again, that's a tough category as well. I'm going to be interested to see how that one shakes out. Male Turf Horse, Domestic Spending, Space Blues, Yeber. Female Turf Horse, Loves Only You, Santa Barbara, Warlike Goddess. Both of those turf categories are a little tough. Steeplechase Horse, that's a slam dunk. It was Baltimore Bucko, Snap Decision, and the Mean Queen. But the Mean Queen, I would think, is a done deal there. Owners, Godolphin, Judmont, and Klarovich. Breeder, Calumet, Godolphin, Stone Street. Trainer, Steve Asmussen, Chad Brown, Brad Cox. Jockey, Irod Ortiz, Flavian Pratt, Joel Rosario. On my ballot, I think Joel Rosario is going to get it. He had such an incredible year, and he was on the verge of some records, and then went to the sidelines for the last 3 weeks, about 3 weeks of the year. And that was just enough time that it was going to be interesting to see if he could get. He had a couple of stakes records he was looking at, annual stakes records. And it was just enough time and just enough stakes left. That was going to be an interesting story for the end of the year. But I think he still did enough. But on my ballot, I had Joel and Irad, again, put up great numbers. I put John Velasquez on my ballot because I thought, man, he had a really good year last year. And so just I thought it'd be fun to honor him as a finalist. But Flavian Pratt got the third spot there. And on the apprentice side of things, John Geraldo, Charlie Marquez, and Jessica Pfeiffer. I had the same three on my ballot. I went with Charlie Marquez on top. And I wish they would come up with a better rule as far as apprentice, because Charlie Marquez lost his bug about the middle of the year, but he had just had a really good early part of the year, and he had a good apprentice career. It may make more sense just to go 365 days back from when they lose their bug, maybe, just over the years, because if you're an apprentice, you only get... as a voter, you only get to look at the apprentice portion of the career, and you can lose that bug at any point in the year. So it just makes it hard sometimes to kind of parse out and really judge these that category fairly. But as I say, it seems like a little bit of thought process there would we'd be able to come up with a better method for apprentice jockey. But what do I know? But there are your Eclipse finalists, and again, they will be announced in about 4 weeks or so, 3 or 4 weeks, and we will know who got it. And you would have to think Horse of the Year. You'd have to think Nix Go is in a pretty good spot for that one as well. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, as promised earlier, our friend Gene Kirshner, Racing Kreskin, will give some predictions for 2022, and we'll look back and see how he did in 2021. Stay tuned. All of that right after this.
Having trouble finding us? It's actually quite simple. Whether online or on your TV, it's never been easier to watch and wager on championship horse racing with Capital OTB. Simply log on to CapitalOTBBet.com. There you can watch our morning shows, live stream races, and wager on our state-of-the-art wagering platform. You can also watch from the comfort of your home on Spectrum Cable Channel 1250 or Fios Channel 467. And win more with Capital OTB.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Birdstone is an outside front. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Birdstone. Birdstone surges past. Birdstone wins the Belmont Stakes.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. Seth Merrow in the studio. We are joined now, as promised, by our friend Gene Kirshner from the Buffalo News, the horse racing columnist for the Buffalo News. Gene, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. It's a nice, sunny, frosty day here in Buffalo after the big game last night.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Is Buffalo a buzz? Is Buffalo warm despite the temperatures? Because I don't know if I'd even heard this term before, but the first headline I saw this morning was they pitched a perfect game. No punts, no field goals. Every time they had the ball, I guess except for the last drive, they had a touchdown. So I'm assuming Buffalo must be ecstatic with the results last night.
Oh, the place was rocking last night. And the headlines in the Buffalo News this morning was cold-blooded, and that's what it was. We finally got the hoodie for sure. It's 20 years of frustration, you know, out the window. And it was a lot of fun celebrating last night. And probably the closest to perfection I've seen since that 51-3 game against the Raiders in the AFC Championship game, which had a little bit more significance. But, man, they were something else last night.
Well, give me your perspective as a Buffalo guy and a Buffalo fan and whatnot. What do you think the prospects are going forward?
Well, you know, they built the team to beat Kansas City with, you know, their first two draft choices this spring were edge rushers. So if we get Kansas City, then, you know, I think the defense, the number one rated defense, well, we should be able to give him a game. Mahomes is good, you know, so yeah. It's not going to be a walkover like last night, that's for sure. And, you know, we'll be rooting for the Steelers tonight, too, just to potentially have a home game against the Bengals, which would be fun, you know.
Yeah. Give me what the feeling was, and what did the temperatures actually hit yesterday? Because I was noting a few days ago, they were saying on the secondary market, prices had dipped a little bit for tickets as it looked like it was going to be a super frigid game. Is that the way it played out?
Yeah, it was in the single digits. The wind chill hit like, I think, 6 below. Wasn't the coldest playoff game ever. I was at the game. It was actually 28 years ago to the date that we did play the Raiders in a divisional game, and it was minus 32 wind chill and 0 degrees at kickoff. And I would say that last night was, number two for sure. It was cold.
Yeah, as a Jets fan, I have shifted my rooting interest at this point to Buffalo. In fact, I did that probably week number two of the season, but as a Jets fan. But it's going to be fun to see how they proceed through. All right, let's shift our attention over to the racing side. And before we get to, as I said, I always like to talk to you this time of year and do a little review and preview of Racing Kreskin. But before I do that, am I right? I'm assuming, and I think I'm right, that the last couple of years you've been at all the Triple Crown races and the Breeders' Cup as well. I know you've been to a number of them. So I was just looking for a comparison to 2020 COVID to 2021. I know for myself at Saratoga, it was completely different. But I know some of the Triple Crown events, maybe it wasn't as different. Maybe the Breeders' Cup as well. But 2020 and 2021, how'd they compare at the big events?
I mean, it was just so much nicer. Started, you know, kicking off with the Derby in 21 with, you know, at least over 50,000 fans.
Yeah.
And you could almost feel the return to normalcy. Not that there's anything normal about what's going on out there these days, but, you know, but there was limited in the next two. There was only 10,000 at the Preakness and the Belmont. So it still had that 2020 feel to those events to some extent. But then it rebounded in Saratoga. As you know, it was just great having all the fans back. And, you know, I think the surges were done over the summer, and it just was great. And I think even the Breeders' Cup at Del Mar, you know, it's things seem to be opening up, and, you know, before this wave just hit. But hoping 2022 is a little bit more normal, you know. Seth, is just that 2020 year was just so weird being at all those venues and, you know, with no fans in the stands. And it was just an odd, you know, feeling and vibe.
Yeah, I mean, I think last year as we got to Saratoga and things really were back much closer to normal, certainly. And I think we all thought, oh, the light is at the end of the tunnel. And then the last couple of months, it's turned around a little bit. But knock wood, from the things I read, hopefully by the time we get to Saratoga this year, things will be getting back in the light at the end. You know, as I say, knock wood, fingers crossed anyway. All right, let's get to, again, a little recap from Racing Kreskin last year. And again, for folks who don't follow Gene, the columnist for the Buffalo News, and every year one of his articles makes some bold predictions as the Racing Kreskin. And we'll go back and look last year at some of the predictions, and you kick things off. Your first prediction for last year, I thought probably a pretty good prediction. It just didn't work out that way. Charlatan dominates the 2021 Pegasus. So, yeah, like I say, I thought you took a good shot, but it was a rough start to the Kreskin year.
Yeah, and it was coming off a year where I goose egged it for the first time in 2020. I mean, I'm just totally throwing it, you know, to the pandemic in 2020 that it just wasn't meant to be. You know, things, you know, the moons weren't aligned at all. But you know, the Charlton thing, you know, what are you gonna do? You know, you're trying to blindly pick what's gonna happen for the next 12 months in January, and that one just didn't work out. But I did rebound and hit, like, I think I hit 3 out of 10, which isn't too bad.
Yeah, we'll hit on the winners in a second. I want to touch on a couple of the others that you missed. But I give you credit. They're bold picks, and I think a really bold pick, number 7 on your list last year, will have a Canadian Triple Crown winner. And when Phil Serpy goes up and wins the Queen's Plate, it was going to be tough because I don't think he had any intention of trying the dirt with Safe Conduct.
No, and, you know, that's the one bad thing about, I mean, it's unique that they have three different races on three different surfaces, but that's the one. There's drawbacks that, you know, if you get a synthetic horse that wins the first leg that's never tried dirt, you know, they don't even show up at Fort Erie for the second leg, and that's one of the reasons I think the drought is, you know, reached 28. Mighty Heart was that it has been the only horse that won the first two legs since Wando took the Triple Crown in 2003. So
you also had the Derby winner will come out of the Arkansas Derby, Superstock the winner there. There were some horses behind, I suppose, that had opportunities too as you headed to Derby week potentially, but didn't get a winner on that one. But again, it's always a bold prediction picking the venue that the Derby, you know, a few months before, the venue that the Derby winner will come from.
Yeah, you don't know, you know, who the hot horse is going to be at that time. And I, you know, when I picked the Arkansas Derby, it's always, you know, Baffert's second choice. And I had a feeling that maybe that's where he was going to send Life is Good, and then he got injured. So I might have had a pretty decent shot if that had happened. But that one's eluded me for the past few years, and I'm hoping 2022's pick can come through. That's one I like to do every year because it's a fun one.
Yeah, and Arkansas is a pretty good pick, the way that three-year-old trail has kind of blossomed over the past decade or so. All right, let's hit on some of the hits from last year. We're going to watch the stretch run to last year's Florida Derby, and one of the predictions was the Holy Bull winner will not come back to win the Florida Derby. And running third here, the winner is going to be Known Agenda, but running third is Greatest Honor. That was the winner in the Holy Bull and went off as the favorite in the Derby, but he puts a win in the column for you running third in the Florida Derby.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the closest thing to a gimme I had on the ledger there. And but, you know, there was still a chance for him to come back and win. You know, Tisla did it the year before, and typically the Holy Bull winner does come back to run in the Florida Derby. So it wasn't, you know, totally, you know, a two-putt, you know, from within, you know, 15 feet or something. So,
and as I say, went off as the favorite. So you were up against it a little bit as they went into the gate. But you put a check mark in the W column there. Same with the Kentucky Derby. I like this prediction every year, too, where you have the position in the gate that the Kentucky Derby winner will come from. Your prediction last year will come from between gates 7 and 13. And with Medina Spirit, you score, although things are still up in the air, but even with the DQ, you still hold on to the victory.
Yeah, it was just nice that I didn't have to put an asterisk on that because Amanda Loon running out of the 7th spot, if he gets put up after this whole Baffert mess gets settled in court or, you know, by the Kentucky board. We'll see. But, you know, early on, you know, I'm batting 500 after the first four picks, and then, you know, things went a little south until the end.
But, yeah, you wind up with a victory at the end. An East Coast horse will win the Breeders' Cup Classic, and we're going to watch the stretch run from the Classic. And it is Nick's Go getting it done out at Del Mar to, again, put a little check mark in what a 3-for-10 year with the predictions last year.
Yeah, not too bad. I mean, I'll take over 250s the Mendoza line. So, you know, I'll take that any year if I can hit three of them. And you know, the one that I was really, which I think is a real reach, is that the Preakness Belmont Double. You know, and Rombauer gave me a shot at it. So, and that, you know, that hasn't happened since the Fleet Alex did it. So, I like to make a couple bold ones. You know, because if it hits, you know, the crystal ball, you know, will show up on you know, Capital OTB's, site.
No, I agree. And I think there are some bold ones in here. And that's what makes it fun. And, you know, 30% as a handicapper is pretty good. So I'm giving you 30% on some of these predictions. And let's go over to 2022 and go down the list. I think you start out with a fun one because we are all looking forward to it in a couple of weeks. The Pegasus, the matchup between Life is Good and Nick's Go. Two superstar horses. I said on the show yesterday, we talked a little bit about the upcoming Pegasus, and I said, I don't know in recent memory a race that has had this kind of anticipation, but we're going to watch the stretch run here of the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, and Life is Good is going to be the victor, and you're predicting a win by Life is Good in the Pegasus. Hey, I think that's a bold way to start the year.
Yeah, I like the mile and an eighth. I think he's dangerous in this race. You know, he's, you know, maturing. He's going into his four-year-old year. You know, Pletcher's got him ready to roll, I think. And, you know, it should be a fun race. You know, the Dirt Mile winner won it back in 2019 when City of Light, you know, upset the Breeders' Cup Classic winner in Accelerate. Now, you know, Nick's Go's no Accelerate. I mean, he's just top-notch. You know, he's going to be the horse of the year for 2021. So it should be a fun race, and, you know, with Sir Winston in there, that makes it kind of fun too. I mean, you know, there's another former Triple Crown race winner. So it's going to be a fun race. I'm actually planning on heading down and seeing our good friend Mr. Natto down at the Pegasus. So should be a fun one.
Ah, good for you. Yeah, we're looking forward to a Florida Derby trip this year. Don't think we're going to make the Pegasus, but good for you, because I think, like I say, I can't remember a race with this kind of anticipation. So we'll see if Life is Good can put a W in the column for you. I love this second one, and I like it because of the end comment. We'll have a DQ in one of the Derby prep races, and you limit it to either the 50 or 100-point prep races, but you wind it up by saying someone's going to be disqualified and send Racing Twitter into a tizzy. And so yesterday, as I was prepping for the show, I put up my idea of what that Twitter person might look like, because I think you're exactly right. If there is a DQ, social media will go insane. But I think this is one where this is a bold prediction.
Yeah, you know, you don't see it too often in the prep races. And even, you know, they're young 3-year-olds, and wacky stuff has happened in these things. And I said, let's go early with a bold prediction, you know, and have some fun. And I usually stay away from the prep races in the Kreskin article. But I said, let's go after it this year, and then we'll get into the Derby stuff, you know.
So we have a couple that will play out early in the year, and then we head into the Kentucky Derby and your annual Where Will They Come From in the Gate. This year you're looking for 14 to 20, and as you note, no more auxiliary gate.
Yeah, and, you know, going outside and the outside gates, you know, in the last couple of years we've had some winners come from out there. You know, American Pharoah came from out there. I'll Have Another, you know, came from out there. Country House came from the 20 in his DQ win. So, you know, it's not out of the possibility. You know, the bolder one would have been probably an inside gate, but, you know, because in the outside gate you can get yourself in a good spot as long as you don't get into one of those, you know, wacky collisions that horses that I've selected to win the race have happened. It's happened to them, like Rocket World and the Dubai horse the one year that got wiped out. Mendelssohn.
Your venue that will be the Derby, the spot for the Derby winner, you're looking at the Santa Anita Derby this year. Do you get extra credit or partial credit? Do you get partial credit if it's a California-based horse who may be prepped in Arkansas?
No, I'm pretty strict with taking the wins. Now, if you give me one, I'll take it. But I think it's got to come out of the Santa Anita Derby for sure.
I love this one, number six, and I will quote it right off the page. Bob Baffert won't train this year's Derby winner. Have to avoid the shutout. This prediction is not really cheating, even though he's banned from competing. I love this, and I think you nailed it. Even though he's banned from competing at the moment, he has the best lawyers of any trainer in the business, so we shall see. And I think everybody in the racing world is right with you on that. I think it's like, well, he's not supposed to be in the Derby, but let's see how it plays out in May.
Well, it's funny because in San Diego, when Corniche won the juvenile, you know, he was asked in the press conference, well, what's going to happen here, you know, with the points and all that? And he just said it was a Belichickian. We shall see. but you know, this one was a little tongue in cheek and just kind of poking fun at stuff, and that's what the Kreskin column is all about.
Absolutely, and one of the fun ones every year, you take a little pop. I skipped one there. We'll have a photo finish in one of the Triple Crown races. So you're taking a couple of pops during the Derby season, a DQ in one of the prep races, and a photo finish in one of the Triple Crown races.
I'm more impressed with myself that I got to work in the term slobber knocker in that one, which I mean, you know, as you know, that's just a drag out fight, you know, that's going to happen. And you love to see the photos. It's kind of like the DQ one, another bold prediction that's some fun. And it hasn't happened enough. So, you know, there's a lot of averages. One of these times we're going to get a photo sign up in one of these Triple Crown races.
And you have three shots at that one, so that helps as well. Also, one of the ones that's fun every year, the prediction on the Haskell hat. I pulled up, and let me look at my notes to make sure. Yeah, I'm going back to 2018. It was pink, so we were in the ballpark, but you're predicting this year it will be maroon.
We're going with maroon. You know, I think sometimes they go with the colors of the horse that won it the prior year. And I believe Mandaloon won the race, and then, if I'm not mistaken, after Hot Rod Charlie took out Midnight Burma last year. So I'm going with the maroon, you know, which was the Mandaloon's colors from Winchell.
Here is another bold prediction. Again, you're looking for the Canadian Triple Crown to be in play. You say it's only happened once since 2003 when Wando captured it. So again, Canadian Triple Crown. This is, you have some in here that maybe people could think are slam dunks. Some are fun. This is bold.
Yeah, you know, I want it to be alive. You know, I'm not picking a Canadian Triple Crown to happen, but I'm thinking this year, you know, maybe we do get a dirt horse that maybe ran in the States, you know, early in the winter time, and that pulls off the Queen's Plate up at Woodbine and comes over across the Peace Bridge here across from Buffalo to win the Prince of Wales, which is always a fun night on a Tuesday night in September.
Yeah, and I have to say, you are giving yourself a little room here to score. You're kind of saying the Triple Crown is in play. Somebody's going to come into the last leg having won the first two. So that gives you a little leeway on that one. And then I got a little shot of the Saratoga tote board with some prices on the tote board, because the prediction number 9, Bombs Away in the Traverse. You're looking for a winner this year to exceed 10-1.
Yeah, Seth, you know, I have to work Saratoga into the article because I love covering up there. But the racing Kreskin doesn't always just look into the crystal ball. Sometimes he does a little research. You know, in the last 10 years, we've had 4 winners, you know, paying over $25. So Bombs Away.
All right. So you got a 4-10 chance. Yeah, that's interesting. I like that. And finally, Breeders' Cup Juvenile winner. You'll be looking for another check mark at the end of the year at the Breeders' Cup as you're looking for the juvenile winner to win by more than 5 lengths. This is one I'd be curious to kind of go back and check the last 10 years and see what the margin of victory is and see what your shot is here, because this seems like kind of a bold prediction as well.
Yeah, you know, I didn't go back and look at it, but you know, Uncle Mo maybe was one that maybe won it by a number of lengths. But I'm looking for really the big hype on a horse that going into the next season is the Derby favorite. And I stayed away from the Classic this year. The Juvenile is the one race, you know, that's always fun on Breeders' Cup weekend, and should be fun at Keeneland. You know,
absolutely, and it's always fun to take a look at Racing Kreskin. And again, folks can find your columns regularly at the Buffalo News website. Gene Kirshner, the horse racing columnist for the Buffalo News. Gene, as always, fun to go over a little review of last year, a little preview of this year. We will certainly check in as the year goes along and have you up maybe on the backstretch again this summer at Saratoga to kind of catch up mid-season. But thanks for the visit this morning. And, hey, go Bills.
Hey, Seth, go Bills. You got it. You got to do it. Hopefully we keep it going. And thanks again for having me on.
Yeah, appreciate it. Gene Kirshner, again, the horse racing columnist for the Buffalo News, and also Racing Kreskin. And I mentioned it last year when I had Gene on. I wonder if there's the audience out there who is too young to remember Kreskin. If you don't remember, you can probably, I would guess, YouTube. But he was big on, I think he described himself as a mentalist, but he could predict in the they would hide an envelope in the audience and he would find, it would be on Johnny Carson or Merv Griffin or whatever. If you don't remember Kreskin. Gene, you still there? Am I right? He described himself as a mentalist. Am I correct?
Yeah, it was back in the 70s, and a mentalist. Yeah, that's how he was described, and he had his own television show, if I can remember.
And am I right when I say they found the envelope? Wasn't it like he would be on the Carson show, and his pay for being on the Carson show would be in the envelope, and it would be hidden under some audience member's seat, and so he would have to divine that?
You're testing my memory a little bit, especially after a night out at the stadium with sub-degree temperatures.
Like I say, though, I am reasonably certain somebody Googles that, they'll find a YouTube of Kreskin. But, again, I just thought that dawned on me. There may be some people out there who are young enough, they don't quite get the reference, but that's what it is. So Gene Kirshner now bringing Kreskin back to life on the racing night. Gene, again, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
All right, see you, Seth.
We will wrap it up for Racing Across America for this Sunday morning. Again, it's fun to talk to Gene, and we'll see how the predictions go as the year goes along. Nice stakes action yesterday that will play out, you would think, in some of those areas going forward. And nice action this afternoon as well. I'll be back in probably about an hour or so with OTB Live for a Sunday afternoon. I see they've kicked things off down in New York, so I'll wrap it up so we can get to the pregame down at Aqueduct. I'll look at Aqueduct and Oaklawn and some of the other action this afternoon as well. So again, we'll be back in about an hour with OTB Live for a Sunday afternoon. Thanks again to our friends at Gulfstream for their sponsorship during the championship meet. We appreciate their support from Gulfstream Park. Wrapping it up for Racing Across America on this Sunday morning, I'm Seth Merrill. Thanks for joining us. We will see you in about an hour.
Capital Off-Track Betting.